Hello, and welcome to Mild-Mannered Reporters. We are your hosts, Sarah Korn,
Sierra Stella,
and Shabazz Khan.
Thank you so much for joining us for our inaugural episode and also our Jack Kirby special. So without further ado, I think we're going to start with some introductions. Shabazz, you want to start?
My name is Shabazz. I write This Looks Like a Job for The Daily. There's two different narratives, and I'm not sure which happened first, but when I was a small child, I either watched Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, or the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie first. I was just like, hey, those people have glasses, and their lives are pretty great. I want to be like them.
For our audio listeners, Shabazz has glasses.
And then I just kind of fell down the rabbit hole.
And now you're here.
Yeah.
So let us know.
Who's your favorite superhero, Shabazz?
Yeah, tell us, Shabazz.
My favorite superhero is Superman. Because he's the best, you know? He's a refugee. End of the day, Superman is just a really, really nice guy. And he just happens to have superpowers and wears a costume sometimes. But no matter what he's doing, he's just a really swell dude. And you can count on him to just be a swell dude. And, you know, that's enough for a superhero.
Sierra, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name's Sierra. I am relatively new to comics, but I'm also, like, relatively old to comics because when I was little, I was very into them. Like, I used to read all of the big compendiums about, like, Superman and Batman and Spider-Man, and I would check out comics from the library, like, every week, like, a huge stack. But my memory's very bad, and so I don't remember virtually anything from that period of my life, so I'm just getting back into comics now at a sort of older age. And there are a few series that I've loved for a long time, but mostly I'm just seeing what's out there. I have two favorite superheroes, and it's both of the Hawkeyes, and that's due largely to the Matt Fraction series, which was really freaking great. I really appreciate that they're both just struggling, but, you know, trying to do good and be good, even if they don't know what that is all the time. I appreciate Kate Bishop for similar reasons to Clint Barton, but she's got it generally more together, and she's got, like, more enthusiasm than he does, and I just really appreciate her. Like, she's been through a lot of stuff, and I really enjoyed her arc throughout the two Young Avengers, like, chunks, and then reading about her in Matt Fraction's Hawkeye and All New Hawkeye and her new series, which I actually have yet to read, but I'm excited about.
It's good. My name is Sarah Korn. I have been a comic book collector since... The very first floppies I ever collected were Kevin Smith's Green Arrow run, where he brought Ollie back from the dead. I've been writing about comics and reading comics and working in and around comics for 20, 30 years. I'm not as knowledgeable about the history of comics as Shabazz is, but I have a great foundation in independent comics. My favorite superhero, it's traditionally been Carol Danvers in her Captain Marvel iteration, but the most recent iteration of Carol, I just haven't been liking it as much, so I have to say it's probably Kamala Khan these days. So yeah, so that's us. That's introductions.
I think without further ado, we should move on to news.
Yeah, let's talk about news.
Yeah, this is our summer recap news segment. Generally speaking, news is only going to be from the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But since this is our first podcast and we're coming to the end of the summer, we figured we'd just sort of tie up the general superhero news from the past few months.
Let's start with the superhero movies, or at least
superhero
the big ones.
Superhero movies.
The first one was Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I have not seen yet, which makes me the terrible comic nerd. What did you guys think?
I really liked it. I think it stayed true to sort of the heart of the first movie. And I think it even went deeper into that. Like, it's a weirdly emotional movie. Like, much more... I know that the Guardians one was very emotional, especially towards the end. But
without being too spoilery, not that I particularly care, but, like, what is emotional about it?
It very much has to do with family and, in particular, father figures
mm-hmm.
on multiple levels. And I think that is, you know, really true to the story of especially... Jesus, what is his name? Star-Lord! There we go! Star-Lord! I think that's true to the story of Star-Lord. All I could think was Chris Pratt.
I was gonna say, we can call him Chris Pratt. Everybody gets it.
Yeah, what did you think, Shabazz?
The first Guardians of the Galaxy is the only movie that can consistently make me cry, and while the second one did not manage to do that, it was very much a worthy follow-up. It built on a lot of the strengths that the first one had and kind of improved on the weaknesses of the first one.
I will say, I didn't not have complaints about it. Like, the pacing was kind of weird at times, and it did feel a little, like, overly cheesy sometimes, but that was definitely intentional. And, like, very self-aware that that was happening. And it was, like, very goofy in a, like, they're in on the joke way, which is fine, and it's very much true to the Guardians' DNA from the first movie. But I imagine it would get a little tiresome upon rewatching. Let's talk Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman came out second, right?
Yes. Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm. It came out towards the beginning of the summer.
I did see Wonder Woman. I absolutely saw Wonder Woman.
What'd you think?
I really liked it. Mm-hmm. In fact, it went so far as to... There are things about Carol's character that I've always really admired, especially in the way that she was written by Kelly Sue, that she was always kind of determined to do the right thing, and that her moral compass as to what the right thing is kind of is really similar to Superman's in a lot of respect, right? Like, mm-hmm. you help people who can't help themselves. You look for the people who need the most help, and that's where you put your effort.
Mm-hmm. Champion of the oppressed.
That one, when Wonder Woman was announced... I went through and started reading a lot of the old Wonder Woman stuff, Rucka's Wonder Woman and Simone's Wonder Woman. I started to see in those comics the things that I really liked in Carol. I started to see them in Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And the Wonder Woman movie really kind of solidified that for me. It was like, okay, yes, this is, I think, this iteration of Wonder Woman is the kind of character that I could very much get behind and speaks to the paladin in me in a certain respect. The big problem that I have with Wonder Woman is that for all of its success and its good writing and great cinematography, it fails women of color in a pretty big way.
Oh, yeah.
As much as I am happy to see a movie like Wonder Woman succeed, I can also say I wish that there had been more. Mm-hmm. I wish that Niobe had a much bigger role. I wish that there had been more women of color in general in the movie. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think?
I really liked Wonder Woman. I really appreciated Diane as a character. I liked that she wasn't, like, disempowered by being empathetic, which is something that I think happens a lot with, like, quote-unquote strong female characters. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated the romance with Steve Trevor not being, like, reductive. He was never like, no, don't do that because I need to protect you. It was always, like, more or less him supporting her actions.
Well, he tried, but she shut him down every time.
Yeah, and she's just gonna do what she's gonna do, and I'm just gonna, like, give her my shield to stand on. I think it got a little cheesy at the end where it was like, I believe in love, but also I was like crying so much at that point that I didn't care. So yeah, no, it was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
It was nice to see a superhero who believed in optimism and believed in humanity again.
Yeah.
It was a little difficult for me to kind of watch that with this particular movie because of Gal Gadot's background with Israel and the IDF and her vocal support from as recent as 2014. Because you have these really honorable ideals that I think should be present in more superhero movies. You also have this, like for me personally, you also have this history with this large organization that's causing one of the greatest human rights violations from the 20th century into the 21st century. That was my dichotomy, and I know it was a dichotomy that a lot of my other Muslim American friends had because... the Israel-Palestine issue is something that is really prevalent to our community.
So moving on to Spider-Man. I think that Homecoming is really, really smart in that it isn't a superhero origin movie, because Lord knows we've seen enough of those in the past couple of decades.
Especially for Spider-Man.
I think it's really fun and very true to Peter Parker as a character. It feels very much like he's just a kid in high school who, like, is suddenly given this great power and great responsibility. It just feels very much like truly a Peter Parker Spider-Man story. It's not consumed with its superheroism. That was said really weird. No, it's not consumed with, like, the superhero storyline. Like, it's not entirely about him being a superhero. It's mostly about him being in high school. And that's really refreshing. Good movie. I would recommend it. And I did recommend it when I wrote the review, so...
All right, so if you haven't seen Spider-Man...
Yeah, go see Spider-Man.
Go see Spider-Man. Got it.
Let's move on to the Joss Whedon news from the past couple of days.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Joss Whedon.
Let's talk about Joss Whedon.
I have no problems. I am not going to rag on you if you continue to like the Whedon universe after the news that broke. For you, those of you that don't know, what happened over the weekend was that Joss Whedon's ex-wife published a blog article in which she essentially spilled the tea. I don't know what the phrase is. She spilled the tea on all of the that Whedon had put her through over the 15 years of their marriage. And that include lying to her about cheating on her repeatedly, like not just once or twice, but repeatedly, both emotionally and physically. He's been gaslighting everybody by claiming that he is, by claiming the mantle of feminism. He's been passing off all of his work as feminist work when they are not.
I do think that that facade has been beginning to crack within the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
Like after, especially Age of Ultron, and then as with his leaked Wonder Woman script in particular.
It's real bad.
It's so bad. Yeah. Like, it's incredibly misogynistic. I had such a hard time, like, reading the excerpts that I did read.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't like Joss Whedon as a person or public figure, but I do like Firefly, for example. But, yeah, no, I'm honestly kind of glad the news about Joss Whedon being a scumbag broke this weekend, because now I can dislike him more openly.
I feel
and
like...
And I have been disliking him openly for the past couple of years. One thing I am worried about is that this won't stick and that he'll still get to make Batgirl. And
he'll probably still get to make Batgirl.
I'm concerned about him making Batgirl, because especially with the new Batgirl of Burnside Comics, she's been great recently.
We're all really concerned. Really love
her. Yeah. And I don't want him to wreck her.
Let's talk about Inhumans, because I really want to yell about some shoulder pads.
Let's move on to Inhumans, yeah. So, Inhumans is coming out soon. When soon?
Yeah, it comes out in IMAX on September 1st, and then you have the series premiere on ABC on September 29th.
I know nothing about Inhumans. The most I know about Inhumans is that Kamal Khan is one.
Here's what you need to know about Inhumans. Disney could not wrestle the rights for X-Men away from Fox.
Yes.
And so Disney got tired of waiting and decided to write the X-Men out of the universe, to put them in their own universe. When they gave up on the X-Men, they're like, if we can't own X-Men, we own Inhumans. The Inhumans are going to be the new X-Men. The Inhumans have been around for a long time.
They've been around since Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, Fantastic Four run.
Right.
Where they lived in a city that was in the mountains, and then they moved that city to the moon. It's what you would expect out of Jack Kirby. You have this race of superpowered beings who were experimented on by aliens in the prehistoric era, and they have this really modern, really isolated civilization where everybody wears these great, magnificent, outlandish costumes and have these powers, and they go through this transformation that can either leave them looking really, really human, or it can leave them like looking really
inhuman.
Inhuman, yeah.
Yeah.
So right? You guys are upset about the costumes in particular. And literally, you guys aren't the only people I've heard this from.
If you look at Medusa, she looks bad. She looks like she's being eaten alive by her shoulder pads. like she does. She looks like, I'm like, where is your neck? Her hair is supposed to be this, like literally, her hair should take up almost the entire frame anytime we see it.
It should be like bad 80s hairdo, but like good.
My buddy Black Bolt. The thing about Black Bolt is that he has a fantastic Maximus costume. Because like Maximus has this really long coat that kind of has the same aesthetic as Black Bolt's regalia, but with the costume in the show, you've taken away basically all of the fun parts of Black Bolt's costume and just given him this all black suit with some of the white detailing from the actual costume. Like he doesn't have his wings, he doesn't have his tuning fork, he doesn't have the cowl. It's just, if you have a superhero property and your costume fails, you're gonna have a hard time recovering from that.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Kirby. Shall we?
Yeah. So I don't know as much about Kirby.
Happy 100th birthday.
Kirby is not my forte. Yes, going to relinquish most of this conversation to y'all.
Yeah. We should mention that the reason we're doing a Kirby episode is because it is his 100th birthday.
On August 28th.
On August 28th.
Which is
Monday.
Who was Jack Kirby? And why is he important in the history of comics?
Jack Kirby is the king of comics. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't really dispute that. Stan Lee is well known as being the architect of the Marvel Universe, but he couldn't have gotten nearly as far without the help of Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby is known for like Captain America, the X-Men, the Hulk,
Fantastic
the Fantastic Four. half the Marvel Universe and half of the characters that are seen in movies and in comics today. These are all characters that were co-created by Kirby, sometimes with Stan Lee, although in the case of Captain America, it was with Joe Simon. He was an artist at both Marvel at DC, and he'd been with these worked for these companies before they were even known as Marvel and DC.
Jack Kirby arguably has the most enduring influence on comics as we know them today.
You can't watch a comic book show or like some form of superhero media today that doesn't have at least a little bit of influence from Jack Kirby. Thor Ragnarok, the entire aesthetic of that movie is just pure Jack Kirby. I once saw this photo on Twitter where they showed a set piece from the Thor Ragnarok trailer, compared it to a page from Fantastic Four. It was a three-dimensional realization of a piece of background detailing from a Jack Kirby comic.
Kirby's style is both instantly recognizable and invisible because of how ubiquitous it is with comics of a certain era.
Yeah, absolutely. He had this idea of superheroes at the time that they're just people. He was talking about this with Fantastic Four in particular, about how he just wanted to like tell a story about people who are suddenly put in this situation where they have these weird powers. Like, one day you're really flexible, one day you're invisible, and you have to deal with that. And he was talking about the Thing in particular when it came to that, like dealing with never knowing when he's going to change into the Thing, and having to like be around his friends and family and never knowing when he's going to look human and when he's not going to look human. And I think that's such an interesting idea, because that's still essentially what's popular today, is superhero stories where you're like, these are people and they're superheroes.
Kirby had some pretty notable longtime collaborations. Some were more, I mean, like, successful is a weird word. I'd say like, some were more amiable than others.
Yeah,
like
he and Simon, I think amiable's a good...
He and Simon seem to have had a really good working relationship.
Yeah.
After World War II, superheroes had started to fall out of popularity in terms of what comics were doing. With Joe Simon, he co-created the genre of romance comics. They created entire genres of comics where you could still find work within the industry without necessarily having to tell these stories about superheroes.
To hear Kirby talk about it, he claims that essentially he was doing all the writing, especially in his collaborations with Lee. He talks about how like he would essentially write the dialogue on the sides of the panels and then hand it to Lee, who would really more or less word for word use that dialogue. That's something that he was fairly bitter about, because he was like paid pretty well, he was able to support his family, but he felt that he wasn't getting the recognition and the monetary recognition as well for what he was doing, for the work he was doing as a writer. Hearing him talk about his influence on comics, Kirby didn't...
He knows.
He knows.
He knows what he knows his influence on comics was.
He knows,
I mean, like, that's how he was marketed when he moved from when he moved from Marvel to DC in the 70s. It's like, the king is here. Like, you read, like, in the first issues of what was known as the Fourth World titles, it was just announced that, you know, these are Jack Kirby's comics. It's like, the king is here. There's a lot to be said about his work on Fantastic Four, but my main exposure to Jack Kirby was really the Fourth World, because my library just happened to have all four of the Fourth World collections. It was really entrenched in 60s era youth culture, but it was like, you know, taking these ideas and concepts from this culture and then mixing it in with this post-Norse mythology, creating this entirely new beast that was just, it was just really, really cool. And a lot of these characters are still around and still playing a role. Steppenwolf is going to show up in Justice League. And of course, if you have Steppenwolf, you can't really go that far until you get the Darkseid. Darkseid is perhaps a character that's very emblematic of just Kirby's political stance, which was really, really, really anti-fascist and really, really anti-Nazi.
For good reason.
Captain America, right?
Like... Yeah. One of my favorite stories about Jack Kirby was the fact, because like when Captain America Comics number 1 was first released, it was at a time in American history where Nazism, very much like today, where Nazism wasn't as controversial as it should be, and there was a lot of vocal support for Nazism. One day in the offices of Timely Comics, a secretary came in and was just like, "Hey, we've got a bunch of Nazis on the phone. They say they're downstairs and they want to meet with the guy who drew Captain America and show him what a real Captain America would do to him." You know, when Nazis show up at your door and they're threatening you, that's a really tense situation no matter what time period you're in, especially if you're Jewish like Kirby was. And Kirby's response was to just roll up his sleeves and go downstairs, where he found that the Nazis themselves were not there. Like, he was ready to fight those Nazis. And then he went overseas and actually fought some Nazis. And then he came back and he wrote more comics about why Nazis were trash. That was Jack Kirby. That was kind of Jack Kirby's deal. He really hated Nazis.
Yeah, not to bring it back to Lee again, but we're going to bring it back to Lee again because I wanted to talk about Funky Flashman, who I did not know existed until, like, literally, like, 3 days ago. Shavaz introduced you to Funky Flashman. Would you like to describe who Funky Flashman is?
Funky Flashman was this character who showed up in an issue of Mr. Miracle, which was another one of those which was a title that fell under the Fourth World umbrella. And he had this servant who was obviously a caricature of Roy Thomas, and Funky Flashman himself was a caricature of Stan Lee, who he was just like this really vapid, really selfish promoter who was trying to get Mr. Miracle to, like, sign on to him with the contract where he would, like, I don't remember exactly, but, like, he would be promoting his escape artist work. Because that was the thing about Mr. Miracle. He was a super escape artist, and that was how he made money. He would perform these really elaborate, really death-defying escapes.
And it was this really vicious caricature of Stan Lee. Funky Flashman, like, he only cared about money. That was the most important thing to him. And the reason he wanted to rope in Mr. Miracle was because he was worried he was running low on funds. This was created after Kirby had left Marvel and he was at DC. It's hard to deny that it was a vicious attack on Lee, because you look at photos of Lee from that time and he's exactly Funky Flashman. Or at least Funky Flashman with the wig and the fake beard on, because he's bald.
There's a character that Kirby created that he's really proud of having created based on the quote from that interview.
Which one?
Black Panther.
Oh yeah, Black Panther. Oh god, Black Panther.
So Kirby's creation of Black Panther is, let's go with, problematic.
Yeah.
His reasoning, anyway.
His reasoning was problematic.
I mean, it was sound, but not. Like, he was like, nobody else is making black characters, so I should make a black character. But yeah, he did it. It was not out of some kind of altruism.
Yeah,
it's like he recognized there was a market.
Mm-hmm. His creation of Black Panther, the way he talked about it, it seemed fairly, like, exploitative. Just like, there's no black characters for black people to read about. Here's a black character.
I have a lot of black, I know I have a lot of black readers.
Yeah.
There's no black superhero character.
Yeah.
I should maybe make a black superhero.
Like,
no, and to be
literally
fair,
in the same breath as he was talking about creating Black Panther, he was talking about, like, how he was the first person to create an Asian character, and then he, like,
that's actually a little debatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't quite, the way he talked about Asian characters and black characters wasn't in a respectful way. The interview was in 1989, and he was a product of the 60s, and, like, I understand that we have to take things in a historical context, but it's very uncomfortable to read from where we're sitting.
Yeah. So, shout out to Kirby for creating the Black Panther, but shout out to Ta-Nehisi Coates.
And Brian Stelfreeze.
Oh, man, and Brian Stelfreeze. That art has just been...
And Reginald Hudlin.
Breathtaking.
Well, Panther's Rage, that's also a good story. It's kind of the definitive Black Panther story and, like, one of the first examples of, like, this long-term story that was told over the course of a series released in 13 parts in this series called Jungle Action. I don't remember who the writer was, but it was a black writer, and it's telling the story about... It's this really politically charged story of Black Panther in Wakanda trying to, like, being a king and dealing with the political ramifications of his life and the impact that it has on this country. It's got beautiful art.
The only Black Panther I've ever read is the series where he marries Storm, which I enjoyed.
Reginald Hudlin's series.
Mm-hmm.
Don McGregor. So Don McGregor and Dan Lee is who the Panther's Rage is accredited to.
And it was followed up with a story where Black Panther fought the Ku Klux Klan. But that storyline never got finished.
It never got finished?
Well, I think it got finished, but, like, it wasn't finished by the original writer. Like, yeah, he did fight the Ku Klux Klan. And I think, like, the reason that he fought the Ku Klux Klan, like, one of the myths behind that is that Marvel asked for the follow-up to Panther's Rage. We need more white people in this story. So, can't get any whiter than the Ku Klux Klan.
For a huge part of Kirby's career, it was about getting as much of his imagination out onto the page as possible. I think Kirby's legacy is that he gave us the world that some of our favorite characters now get to play in.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the king.
And he'd be the first person to tell you. to celebrate Kirby's birthday, there are a couple of initiatives that happen. The first one is hashtag Wake Up and Draw, which I believe started in 2014.
Yeah. Artists wake up and they'll just start drawing pages, and then they'll just auction off the art, and the proceeds will go to the Hero Initiative. The Hero Initiative is a federally recognized not-for-profit organization that's for like comic writers, comic writers, artists, or anybody who's worked in comics and needs some help, especially people who worked in comics like during the Golden Age and the Silver Age. Like Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, these were the creators of Superman. A big wake-up call was the fact that the people who basically kickstarted the entire genre of superhero comics were living in poverty for a good portion of their post-Superman life.
So on August 28th, when Wake Up and Draw is happening on Kirby's birthday, keep an eye out.
Look for the hashtag #WakeUpAndDraw. Our creators who do their art will let you know where you can go to bid on it.
Mm-hmm.
Go bid on art that you like, or create your own art and put it up for auction and then donate the money.
Even if you can't afford to buy art, you can always afford to retweet something and like give more exposure to that process happening, and maybe someone else who follows you will be able to buy art.
Not only that, it's a day that artists are going to be showcasing their abilities. So
yeah.
Just go and look for artists that you may have never known that you'd like. Like, just scan the hashtag. Check out, look for new art. It's kind of cool.
Check out art from diverse creators because they desperately need that exposure, you know?
Yeah, you know what you should do? You should go check out the Kelly Sue DeConnick's Visible Women hashtag that she ran a couple of weeks ago that highlighted women of color operating in the comic book industry. Follow a bunch of those creators and then see what they do for Wake Up and Draw. That would be an excellent way to celebrate Wake Up and Draw.
An excellent way to celebrate Jack Kirby's birthday.
Yes.
Yeah. In these last few minutes, we're just going to give you some recommendations about upcoming issues
that
we're excited about.
There are a couple. Actually, there are three that I want to make a quick note of. One is actually came out last week. Bitch Planet Triple Feature #3 came out last week. This is a series. There's five issues where they're telling smaller stories in the Bitch Planet world. It's kind of an anthology series. It's really cool. It's a great way to showcase some new talent and to give the writers, to give Val and Kelly an opportunity to backstock some scripts and some pages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been fun. This week, so today being Wednesday, War Mother #1 comes out from Valiant. War Mother is a comic book that last summer got a one-shot as part of one of their big 4,000 AD event, Valiant Comics 4,000 AD event. War Mother is set in the far distant future, where most of the world's water is gone, and this one community lives in South America in one of the last few remaining jungles because they were a group of biologists originally. So they essentially figured out how to grow their world. Everything in their world is alive. So the world is interesting, the relationship is interesting, the art is beautiful. It was heartbreaking to me that we only got a one shot. So War Mother #1 comes out this week. It's gonna be a limited series, 4 issues, that tells more of her story, and I'm really looking forward to it. Finally, because it's Kirby, Marvel is releasing all this month a bunch of his #1. So they're re-releasing a bunch of his #1s, and they're selling them under their True Believers title, which means they're all $1. So if you want to check out Kirby's work, so they released Devil Dinosaur #1, Marvel did. They're doing Devil Dinosaur #1. There are a bunch more. So if you go to your comic book shop, look for the $1 section. And there should be a whole spread of Kirby classics this month. So those are definitely some things to check out.
In keeping with the Kirby theme, I'm just going to recommend a few series to keep your eyes out for. There's Black Bolt by Saladin Ahmed and Christian Ward. It's this really, really psychedelic prison escape story where Black Bolt teams up with the Absorbing Man. It's got beautiful, Christian Ward does the art for it, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's just really, really, it's like some of the most beautiful art you've ever seen in a comic book.
Christian Ward's art is hard to describe. He uses colors in a way, the closest thing that I can think of when I think of Christian Ward's art is the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds part of the Yellow Submarine.
I saw this one piece that Christian Ward did where he colored a piece of Chris Somney's art of Black Bolt, and it just brought a completely different dimension to Chris Somney's art. One, it shows that colorists are super, super important to a to the tone and feel of a comic. Two, it also shows just like the talent that Christian Ward has in like taking somebody else's style and just kind of melding it with his own to create this new beautiful piece.
We'll see if we can't find them and put them up on our Instagram so you can kind of see the difference.
Yeah, and with Saladin Ahmed's writing, it's really heartfelt, and there's a sense of grandeur to it. But like whenever the characters are interacting with each other, it's really naturalistic. And that's just part. Big part of the appeal of the series. Every issue leaves you wanting more, and it's just great. Then of course this was released, I think, 3 weeks ago at this point. Tom King and Mitch Gerard's Mr. Miracle, which
segues into our hero of the week.
Mr. Miracle is the we talked about him before. He's from Jack Kirby's Fourth World, and his big deal is that. So you have Darkseid, and then you have his opposite, Highfather, and he's the son of Highfather, who was switched with the son of Darkseid as part of a pact to negotiate a peace between Apocalypse and New Genesis, which are these two worlds that are complete polar opposites of each other that are always constantly in this destructive war. So in order to negotiate a peace, they decided to switch their sons. Orion, the son of Darkseid, was raised by Highfather, and Scott Free, the son of Highfather, was raised by Darkseid. And what's really interesting about Scott Free is that he grows up in this world that's completely that's just like completely shaped by the most total form of fascism that you've ever seen, and he ends up still being a good person. Instead of a warrior, he becomes an escape. He becomes an escape artist. He chooses this really peaceful path. But with the series by Tom King and Mitch Gerads, there was a lot of callbacks to his work with Omega Men, wherein it treats the comic page as kind of like this prison. So if Mr. Miracle is the ultimate escape artist, the confines of a comic book page? And it's going to be really interesting to see that happen, especially with like the psychological turmoil that he's going through in the series. Should include a trigger warning. The opening of the book involves Mr. Miracle attempting to commit suicide. And I've got one more recommendation.
This is
Mech Cadet U. It's written by Greg Pak with art by Takashi Miyazawa, who you might be familiar with on his work with Ms. Marvel, with Kamala Khan. It's this really adorable comic about a boy and his giant robot. It's just this really sweet, really earnest book with like adorable art, and I just can't wait to see where it goes next.
And I don't have any recommendations for this week, but you can bet I'm going to be talking about the new Runaway series next week when it's closer to when it's actually coming out.
All right, well, that's our show for today. This has been our inaugural episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, I'm Sarah.
I'm Sierra.
I'm Shabazz.
And we're the Mild-Mannered Reporters.